Thank you, Jerry. Joe, we will see you guys tomorrow as Blue Jays go for that series win. And it depends on how you look at the Mets series. But if you look at it as 1 4-game series, then the Blue Jays have only lost one series in the month of June, and that was that 3-gamer to the Baltimore Orioles last weekend, and they'll try to keep that streak going tomorrow against Chichi Gonzalez and the Texas Rangers. Right now, let's talk about this one. 416-870-0590, star 590 on the cell, long distance, 1-888-666-0590. The Blue Jays fall 4-0 to the Texas Rangers. Matt Boyd makes his major league debut solid. Gives up 4 runs on 9 hits over 6 2/3 innings. No walks, huge, 7 strikeouts. 3 solo homers were what did him in. The 7 strikeouts, by the way, for Matt Boyd tie Mark Zepchinski's Blue Jays record for the most strikeouts in a major league debut. He did it July 7th of 2009 at Tropicana Field against the Rays. The 3 home runs allowed also tie a Blue Jays club record for a major league debut. Matt Williams, not that one, not the guy who's managing the Washington Nationals. Matt Williams, the pitcher, gave up 3 home runs to the New York Yankees in his major league debut, which was August 2nd of 1983. At Exhibition Stadium for the Toronto Blue Jays. 416-870-0590. Star 590 on the cell. Long distance, 1-888-666-0590. Your thoughts on Matt Boyd, on Yovani Gallardo shutting down the Blue Jays today. On anything Blue Jay-ic, welcome on Jays Talk. And we're going to start off with Rocky in Markham. Hello, Rocky.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. The Jays batters didn't have an answer for Gallardo, so I would have to give a lot of credit for how he pitched. Like, he did get a few calls off the plate, but overall he did have a great pitching performance. But since this is the Blue Jays, I want to – Matt Boyd, I think he deserves a second shot at another start, because overall I think he did a great job. He just gave up a couple of home runs with those inside pitches. But what do you think? Do you think he's going to get a second shot at the rotation?
I do. I think, you know, we'll hear from John Gibbons probably within the next 10 minutes or so, and I'd be very surprised if he doesn't say that Matt Boyd will get another shot on when's the next time? Against the Red Sox, I guess, is the next time that spot comes up on July 2nd. The day after Canada Day, the last game of this homestand. I would be very surprised if Boyd wasn't given another try. I mean, he looked fine out there. The numbers aren't terrific when you look at it. 4 runs on 9 hits over 6 2/3 innings. But that was a good performance by Matt Boyd today. I would say I'm sure. Nothing is sure. But, he definitely deserves another start or two.
I agree, because, like, especially for having a – make his major league debut. I wouldn't say he wasn't bad at all, but with that being said, do you think Aaron Sanchez comes around that time?
Sanchez isn't going to be ready. Aaron Sanchez isn't even thrown off a mound yet. Aaron Sanchez won't be back before the All-Star break.
Okay. I just need to know, because I remember last year around July 5th, that's when Oakland made that splash going after Jackson Marja. Do you think the Jays would have to go after a starter at this point in time, or do you think it's going to be most likely towards the trade deadline? Because right now they're fiddling around the pitch starter, and right now it could be between Aaron Sanchez and Matt Boyd, right? So what are your thoughts, and thanks for taking my call.
All right, thanks for the call, Rocky. I think the Blue Jays are trying to get a starting pitcher, and they're trying really hard. Whether it happens now or whether it happens a month from now is probably not up to them. I know that no team really thinks it's out of it. Maybe the Phillies do. The Brewers and the Marlins, especially now, having lost Giancarlo Stanton for 4 to 6 weeks, the Marlins should think that they're out of it. But I don't know that anybody else really is. And there's no team that's in a rush to make a deadline deal right now. So I know that the Blue Jays are willing to pay a premium now to make a trade, to get a team to move now instead of waiting until July 31st, but so far they haven't found a dance partner yet, and they're trying. And it wouldn't surprise me if at any point in time they were able to strike a deal. But it also wouldn't surprise me if we had to wait closer to the deadline. But I do know that they are trying very hard to add to this starting rotation. Let's go out east. Troy's in Dartmouth, Nova Scotia. Hey, Troy.
Hey, how are you?
All right, go ahead.
I'd like to get your input on what you think about the umpires behind the plate on the strikes and balls. I've noticed, I'm not sure how accurate the pitch tracker is on the TV, but I noticed, like, this game, it was really bad, but it looks like that the umpires are, like, really having trouble calling strikes and balls consistently.
I think the pitch tracks is what's making people think that the umpires are having trouble calling balls and strikes consistently. You know, before we had this tool, and we see it for every pitch now, people weren't nearly as upset or incensed or, you know, whatever. They didn't think umpires were nearly this bad, and now we're seeing what the truth is. And the box is, I know it's calibrated every day, and the up and down changes for the height of the batter. I think it's pretty accurate. I don't know how that it's 100% accurate. I'm not sure anything could be 100% accurate, but it's pretty accurate. And we will, you know, we'll see. We'll see what they do with it. But I think that there's also a lot of overreaction from fans. I see balls that the pitch track says misses a strike zone by like a hair, by an inch, by a half inch. And people are beside themselves. How can a guy miss that call? As long as you're using human beings to call balls and strikes, mistakes are going to be made. And especially today, you've got Marcus Patillo, who's a rookie, who's not a full-time Major League umpire. He's a AAA guy called up. Asking him to be perfect is a lot to ask. He wasn't very good today. He wasn't horrible. He made a couple of really, really bad calls, but only a couple. And he was just consistently giving Gallardo a pitch an inch or two off the plate outside. And that's really, really, I mean, the idea that this is, it's an easy thing to do kind of defies logic a little bit. It's a very, very, very difficult thing to do. And I think, which is why I've been talking for years about robot umpires, I think it's something that they shouldn't ask human beings to try to do.
Yes, I agree.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks a lot. You answered my question. Thanks.
All right. Appreciate the call. The good thing about it is that Angel Hernandez worked the plate yesterday. So we don't have to worry about that happening again. He'll be at second base where it's really hard to impose your will on a game. He tried a little bit today with that no swing call on Rougned Odor in the ninth inning before he wound up singling off of Todd Redmond, which was just a terrible call. That's one that's easy to make that Angel, I don't know, wasn't paying attention or something. We'll continue to take your calls, but first, let's hear from the manager. Blue Jays skipper John Gibbons met the media, as he does after every game, in the wake of today's 4-0 loss to the Texas Rangers, and the first thing Gibby did was talk about the kid, Matt Boyd, making his major league debut today.
Hey, I thought he did a great job, you know, especially being his debut. You know, I mean, but we ran into Gallardo today, who was, you know, I mean, he was fantastic. So, you know, normally if you get into the seventh inning, if you give it, you know, you give it 3-4 runs, you know, with our offense, you feel pretty damn good, you know. So, yeah, I thought he did a great job. He had a bunch of strikeouts. I don't think he walked anybody. You know, they were solo home runs, but you know, I thought he looked good and confident, so he ought to feel good. And even though, you know, he gets an L on that for a debut, you know, I hope he feels good.
What do you think about his composure that he showed out on the mound?
I mean, great, yeah. I mean, that's ahead of the game. You never know what to expect, really, somebody making their debut. But, yeah, I think he's a confident guy. And, yeah, you know, we saw something there, that's for sure.
What made Gallardo so effective?
Well, he was picking it apart pretty good. He's primarily pitching off his fastball. He'd throw some cutters and occasional, you know, off-speed pitch. But he'd just get those strikes and then he'd expand. You know, I mean, he's having a great year. He's one of those guys that, you know, I mean, he shut down a good offense today too. But he just, I mean, great command. But he's known for that too. I mean, that was a great pickup by those guys. Anybody else?
Apparently not. From what you saw, do you think Boyd deserves another start?
Oh, is he from Taiwan or? Apparently, remember every time Chin Ming Wong threw, they asked you, was he going to make another start? Yeah, I don't see why not.
Yeah, exactly. Don't see why not, Matt Boyd. And John Gibbons is right. Every single time Chin Ming Wong started, there were numerous questions from the Taiwanese media about, will he make another start? Is he going to make another start? Is he in the rotation full-time? When's his next start? Is he going to make another start? But the question deserved to be asked there of Matt Boyd today, and Matt Boyd definitely deserves another one. And unless something happens, and something could happen, talking about trades earlier, unless that happens, Matt Boyd will likely get his next start on July 2nd as the Blue Jays wrap up a four-game series against the Boston Red Sox. The Blue Jays are going to wrap up a three-game series against the Texas Rangers tomorrow afternoon, and they'll do it with a rubber game. Drew Hutchison has been getting bucket loads of run support all year long against the rookie Chichi Gonzalez. And we're on the air at 12:30 Eastern time with a pregame. I'll try to talk to Matt Boyd for a 1:07 first pitch. We'll probably hear from Matt Boyd a little bit later on as well. We're going to let the network go at the top of the hour, but we will continue to Jays talk it up until 5 o'clock Eastern time. So if you're on hold, stay on hold. If you're not on hold, get on hold. And the way you can get on hold, there's only one way. You have to call us, 416-870-0590, *590 on the cell, long distance, 1-888-666-0590. Blue Jays blanked by the Rangers, 4-0 this afternoon. It's the Honda Postgame Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
This ain't like when you're at a game and sign up for a credit card just to get the prize and then you immediately cancel the credit card. Because there's no prize when you sign up for our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand.
And back comes Matt. Breaking ball. Swing and a miss. He struck him out. Welcome to the big leagues, young man. And the 2-2 pitch, strike three called, struck out another one.
How about that? Matt Boyd strikes out the first two batters he faces in his major league career. Today he made his major league debut. He wound up with 7 strikeouts to tie a Blue Jays club record for the most strikeouts by a pitcher in his big league debut. The other one was a lefty as well, Mark Zepchinski, with 7 strikeouts against the Tampa Bay Rays 6 years ago. But Matt Boyd also gave up 3 solo homers, and more importantly, the Blue Jays didn't score. Shut out for just the second time this season, losing 4-0 to the Texas Rangers. I'm Mike Wilner. This is Jays Talk, and we're taking your calls all the way to 5 o'clock Eastern time at 416-870-0590. *590 and long distance. 1-888-666-0590. Your calls continue all the way to the top of the hour. Let's go out to Grimsby. Frank, welcome to Jays Talk.
Thanks, Mike. Thanks for taking my call. What I was really impressed about today was Matt Boyd and how he showed poise. Even though he gave up 3 home runs, he came back and got the next 3 outs. And that really looked good. And I think that he does deserve a second start. As well, you got to tip your hat to the other team's pitcher. He showed a lot of control. You can't score 12 runs every game, but, I'm sure the boys will bounce back with the game tomorrow. And I'm looking forward to seeing how Matt Boyd continues on down the line. And I have a question for you. If the Jays do trade for a starter, who do you think will be the odd man out?
Who will be the odd man out? I think it would be Matt Boyd who would be the odd man out. He pitched well, you're right. He does deserve another start, absolutely. I don't think there's any question about that, but I also think that that's the most replaceable piece of this starting rotation right now. You've got R.A. Dickey and Mark Burley, who aren't going anywhere. You've got Marco Estrada, who only Max Scherzer's been better than Marco Estrada over the last couple of weeks. And you've got Drew Hutchison, who has been up and down and probably more down than up. But he's got a a year and change under his belt, and we know what he's capable of. And you know, as your fourth or fifth starter, there's really no issue with having Drew Hutchison as being that guy. Now, if they trade for a starting pitcher, I would think that there's a reasonable chance that Matt Boyd would be involved in the trade anyway. And if not, then certainly that's the spot you replace by bringing in another starting pitcher.
Okay. I want to wish the guys a lot of luck in the future road trip and all the way to the World Series, hopefully this year.
Playoffs. Let's just start with playoffs, right?
All right, Mike.
We'll worry about the World Series later. But yeah, appreciate the call, Frank. Look, this is a very good baseball team, and it's going to be a lot of fun to watch. The rest of the way, it is a big road trip coming up. Got to get through this homestand first. July is going to be big. I mean, if they don't do well in July, it's not like they're going to be done. But July is going to be big. 16 out of 19 on the road between July 3rd and the 26th with the Pan Am games in town. The All-Star break in the middle. So that's going to be significant. And it is a big road trip coming up through the AL Central, Detroit, the White Sox, and the Kansas City Royals. Joey is in Oakville. Hey, Joey.
Hey, how are you?
All right.
So my comment is with the home plate umpire like a few callers ago,
yeah.
How he allowed the strike down to expand for Gallardo. And I think Gallardo took advantage of that, and it took the bats right out of the Jays. And I believe that MLB should allow the managers to challenge if the umpires are calling bad calls. Why not allow them to challenge the call at the plate?
Because there's no perfect way of measuring whether a call is right or wrong at the plate. That's one thing. And another thing, I think if you let managers challenge balls and strikes, forget the pace of play rules. 7 and 8 hour games will become the norm because they'll be challenging every third pitch.
Okay, very valid point. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think you can do that. But yeah, Gallardo was certainly taking advantage, as he should have, of being allowed to work off the plate a little bit and getting strike calls that were off the plate. But you can't throw 8 2/3 innings of three-hit shutout because of the umpire, right?
That's true. Now, my other comment is, do umpires go through, like, simulation where if they don't cut the mustard, they're let go?
No.
They don't.
No, there's no accountability. I mean,
no accountability.
There's
got to
be somewhere. I don't know where. We never hear about it. But legitimately, there doesn't appear to be any accountability for umpires. As long as they're trying their best, that's the best you can ask for. It's an imperfect science. Jerry Howarth has said it a million times. Umpires are asked to begin at perfect and get better from there. And so, you know, that's a lot to ask of any human being. It can't be done. But technology affords us now to be able to help and to be able to see who's really not getting the job done and who really is. And I think we should be using as much of that technology as possible to make the game, make the players the determining factor of the outcome of ball games as much as possible. You know, you have guys like Angel Hernandez, who umpired third today, and C.B. Buckner, who we've seen before, and Joe West, who really like to be a show and like to impose their will on a game and want to make sure everybody knows they're working. But the rest of them, if they screw up, it's not for lack of effort, at least.
It's unfortunate they don't get held accountable.
Yeah, it is. But that's the way it works, right?
Yeah, and one last comment. I think if the Jays keep winning series, the standings will take care of themselves. So even though they're not in first place now, I think by the end of the year, if they keep winning series, we'll be just fine.
Agree 100%. Absolutely true. Thanks, Joe.
No problem. You have yourself a good day.
All right, you too. Appreciate the call. Yeah, all the Blue Jays have to do is win series. And really, you know what, it's even less than that. I've talked about this before, that if the Blue Jays win 11 out of 20, it doesn't sound like a lot. It's one win separated from 500. But right now, there are 86 games left in the season. So if they win 11 out of 24 times, and then say 4 out of 6. That's an 88-win season for the Blue Jays, and that's more than likely enough to get them into the playoffs. So they really, I mean, it's not like they have to win two-thirds of their games the rest of the way. Just keep steadily winning. Win a little bit more than you lose, and it gradually grows and grows and grows and grows. 11 out of 20 doesn't seem so big. But if you do 11 out of 20, then when there are 6 games left in the season, you'll have 84 wins, and you'll be in a really nice little spot. Ryan is in Mississauga. Ryan, you're next on Jay's Talk. Go ahead.
Hey, Mike. Yeah, I've actually called in a couple times, and you and I have had conversations about robot umpires once or twice. That's not what I want to talk about today, but I will just comment. Yeah, it's not all, or it's not, you know, the odd umpire that needs to go, like the last caller was talking about, with accountability and whatnot. No umpire is perfect. All behind the plate umpires need to go per robot umpires. I mean, it's not one umpire not doing his job. It's, you know, they're human, and humans are imperfect, like you said. And if you want all the calls to be perfect, there's only one way to do that.
Yeah, but you got to figure out a perfect way to do it first. And I don't know that we're there quite yet, but we're close.
Yeah, the robot umpire is certainly a little closer. The pitch track, certainly a little closer. Anyway, like I said, didn't really want to get into that, but yeah, it irks me too. First thing I wanted to say was Kevin Pillar. If there was a William M. Jennings or Masterton trophy for baseball, whichever the one is with perseverance and dedication to hockey, you'd have to give it to him this year. I'm impressed with the way that he's been playing of late. I mean, you know, he was up and down and up and down over the past couple of years, as, you know, a lot of young ball players are, but the difference this year is impressive. The defense that he's brought to the table has been incredible, and I mean, at the plate, yeah, he's been up and down and up and down. I think a little more up than down, but maybe not. I'm just, kudos to Pillar, because he's been a lot better this year. It's impressive.
Yeah, I mean, this is his, he's been given the opportunity to play every day, whether it's because of the Saunders injury or Dalton Pompey not working out, whatever it is, he's taken advantage of the opportunity, and he's done a great job. And there was a long time in there where he was the only real outfielder in the outfield.
Yeah.
And, you know, the defense really showed up. I think the defense was there last year. I think this is a product of opportunity more. He's shown this more and more this year because he's had more chances to make these catches. But, you know, this is a guy who is a fifth-year pro and was a 32nd-round draft pick, and I think people forget that baseball takes a long time, and even though he was a college guy, to establish yourself as an everyday player, finally, in only your fifth year after being taken in the 32nd round, that's a pretty nice accomplishment.
Yeah, not bad at all. The second thing I wanted to talk about, I mean, I spend a lot of time listening to the fan. I drive a truck for a living, so I listen to the radio a lot. Over the past week or two, I mean, I heard something that really surprised me earlier in the week about Alex Anthopoulos and his job still not being any kind of secure with us. I mean, I know there was talk about getting the Orioles GM to replace him or Beeston, I can't remember.
Beeston,
yeah, okay, well, it, I mean, you know, after pulling off the Donaldson trade for Laurie, I mean, you know, this R.A. Dickey trade is still so much maligned. But as somebody, actually, I think it was you, was saying earlier in the week, you know, I mean, what would you do if we didn't have R.A. Dickey over the last 2 years? I mean, he was a Cy Young Award winner before we got him, but as a knuckleball pitcher, I mean, consistency isn't exactly, you know, you're not going to get 2 Cy Young Award winning seasons in a row, more likely than not. But he's still, you know, at the very least, been a fantastic stopgap, and much more than that. You know, he's been great as far as you can ask a knuckleball player to be anyway, or a knuckleball pitcher, rather. I mean, and the trade with Miami, I mean, so much more has worked out well for Anthopoulos in the past couple of years than not. I mean, if you look at where we were 3 and 4 years ago and look at where we are now, I mean, it's the pitching has surprised everybody over the past 2 years, whether it be, you know, the bullpen surprising us 2 years ago and then thinking we were set in the bullpen last year and having it in a hot workout. You know, you sort of had to shoot from the hip a little bit in terms of, you know, where he thinks the pitching is and, you know, adjust as the year goes on. But I think he's done a good job, and I'm surprised that he's still so under the gun. I just wanted to know what you thought about that.
Well, I think that it – see, I don't know, because I'm not in the mind of ownership, and I don't know what they're thinking. But I think that the feeling is that with a new president coming in, everyone's job is up for grabs. And,
yeah,
you know, Alex Anthopoulos has been the GM here for 5 or 6 years. They haven't made the playoffs, but, I mean, it's definitely not that simple. But in the eyes of ownership, it might be. And in the eyes of the new president, it might be. And a new president who comes in may very well want his own people. So you never know. I have a feeling it's, you know, and I've said this before a few times. I feel like it's almost that if Alex Anthopoulos, if the Blue Jays make the playoffs and do well this year, then Alex might be the next president. And if they don't make the playoffs, he might get fired, which seems kind of crazy to me. But that's sort of the feeling I get. And you know, you look around, Andrew Friedman is a president now. Theo Epstein is a president now. These young hotshot GMs get elevated to those positions very early in life. And it could well happen. If the Blue Jays win the World Series this year, Alex Anthopoulos could very well be the next team president. Tony LaCava is a GM, and off you go.
Yeah.
We shall see. Thank you, Ryan. Sure. I appreciate the call.
Thanks, Mike.
Absolutely. The Blue Jays, 4-0 losers to the Texas Rangers today and this year, I guess. They beat them 12-2 yesterday. The rubber match is tomorrow. We will continue to take your calls on Jays Talk, but first, let's hear from the kid. 24-year-old Matt Boyd made his Major League debut today, gave up 4 runs on 9 hits over 6 2/3, didn't walk anybody, struck out 7, gave up 3 solo home runs. Here's what he had to say to the media assemblage after the game.
Matt, whatever nerves you may have had going out on the mound, how much does it help when you strike out the first 2 batters of the game?
Helped out a lot, you know. Navi just took me, man. He kept me where I was supposed to be and just helped me stay centered and just, you know, kept attacking.
What did you learn from today? I mean, obviously, you know, home runs are going to happen, but it's always nice to give, if you're going to give them up to lead off innings instead of having base to base.
No, definitely. Yeah. Well, if the ball's up, it gets hit, and that's one thing you can learn, you know. But you know, just getting ahead in the counts. You know, when I got hurt, like you said, it was when the ball was up, and you know, when I was behind in the count, Moreland, I was 3-0. You know, he knew I had to come fastballs there, so you know. Same game, you know, just got to get ahead in the count and I just got to attack.
How nervous were you, or were you at all?
I wasn't really nervous, just excited. You know, the first 3 innings, I was just kind of coming out of my delivery a little bit and a little jumpy. But, you know, more than anything, it was just excitement, not too many nerves.
Are you pleased with your performance, or how would you look at it?
Definitely, it's definitely something to build off of, you know. Just as a goal to start, you always want to get deep in the game, put your team in a position to win. And some of those home runs, you know, I know that could have made a few pitches just a little differently and just executed them a little better. And, you know, just going to build off that, take it for what it is, and, you know, just grateful and blessed for this opportunity. It's just, you know, it's awesome to, you know, pitch in front of this crowd.
What did it mean to you to have Gibby throw you back out there in the 7th?
Oh, it meant a ton. I was, you know, really grateful that he let me roll with it and believed in me there. And, I'm just grateful that, you know, the whole front office and everyone gave me this opportunity. And, you know, I just want to continue to build off it and go forward with it.
Were you happy with the way your repertoire worked today? I mean, you seemed to be using everything and building off the fastball early and then varying it. Is that...
Definitely, no. Curveball could have been a little better today. You know, that's what I got beat with that one time. And it was just kind of sporadic. You know, one thing I could work on, yeah, sharpen that thing up.
First inning, suddenly you found 95 twice in a row to the fielder, and was that a measure of adrenaline in that?
Sure it is. Yeah, sure you could say that, yeah, definitely.
Did you have a chance before the first pitch to step back and just take in the entire scene?
Definitely, you know, right before that first pitch, I always I get the ball back, I always just say a little prayer, and right after that, I kind of looked around, and it was pretty surreal. You know, it's getting to live my dream, and all the years playing this game and working for it, you know, kind of came up to this point, and it was just awesome. It was just it was surreal, definitely.
How did you get the word that you were actually coming up?
It was hanging out yesterday, and got the phone call just with my wife. Got the phone call later in the day, and just from there we just drove the pickup up to Toronto.
If somebody had to tell you not to get on that bus to Scranton,
yeah,
who was that?
I think it was Gary or someone along those lines. Yeah.
You start packing at that point, thinking something's up.
I'm living out of a suitcase right now. I didn't have a place in Buffalo either, so my wife and I are kind of living like nomads. So we're just living out of our pickup in the suitcases right now. So it made it easy.
Matt, there's a ball in a clear case in your locker. What ball did you keep?
I was giving it to me after the game. It's pretty awesome. I think it was the strikeout pitch to Sinsu too.
You had a pretty big smile on your face after that. How much of a role did Navarro play today for you?
He was awesome. He was everything there. You know, he you know, I trusted in him, and man, he let me roll. He kept me right where I needed to be, and not too high, not too low, and called a great game. And the whole defense played great, and it was just just too bad we didn't come out on the winning side of things.
So there's Matt Boyd. Sounds like he's got his head pretty squarely on his shoulders, and a good assessment of his Major League debut. He can't remember who told him not to get on the bus to Scranton, and that was the indication that he was going to be called up more than likely and make this start, and he did. His Major League debut, like he said, wishes he would have been on the winning side, and it's tough to revel in the awesomeness of your Major League debut when you lose. But I think that was a good job there by Matt Boyd. And we'll talk to him tomorrow for the pregame show as the Blue Jays get set for the rubber match tomorrow against these Texas Rangers. Right now, we continue our Jays talk at 416-870-0590. Star 590 on the cell and long distance, 1-888-666-0590. Tony is in Scarborough. You're up next on Jays talk. Go ahead.
Hey, Mike, I'm reveling in the solemnity of how well Boyd did, whatever that means. He did great. He ran into a buzzsaw. Nice. Not his fault. I'll take that. I'll take today's game as a positive. What I wanted to say is that we're horribly overdue for robo-umps. And one of the reason is that pitchers can't demand it because they'll never get a called strike again. I also object to the requirement that the pitch tracker or robot ump system be perfect. It simply needs to be better than the status quo, and I firmly believe that that is true now. Robo-umps would dramatically improve the integrity of the game. I believe it would bring more fans in, and I know personally I'd certainly pay more attention if we had it.
You'd pay more attention, really?
I would watch.
Like, you think that would bring more fans aboard?
I do. Baseball is a very statistical game. When you throw in a human making incorrect calls, doing their best, fine, but making incorrect calls, let's face it, regularly. You know, there are balls called strike called balls every single game, often in key situations. It destroys the integrity of the game.
I think that's going a little bit far.
I don't.
Okay. I know, because you said it. I don't think the integrity of the game is being destroyed at any point. When you're talking about integrity, you're talking about people who are intentionally doing things wrong, who know better and who are messing up on purpose. And that's not what happens. I mean, the integrity of the game is secure as far as balls and strikes calls are concerned for the most part. But you do make a good point where you're saying it doesn't need to be perfect, it just has to be better. And you're right, the pitch tracks, the pitch FX system, all that is better than what we're getting from human umpires right now. I would be you know, I think we spend a lot of time talking about this on this program, and it's sort of like tilting at windmills because it's not going to change. I would be surprised if it changed in the next decade, let alone in the lifetime of anyone listening right now. And not just because the umpires' union is strong, it's not as strong as it used to be, but because that would be a radical and massive change to go to some sort of a robotic cyclopsy system for calling balls and strikes. But I do think that it's the best thing to do. I just don't think that the game is going to move that way. Thanks for the call, Tony. Let's go to Joe in Toronto. Joe, you're next on Jay's Talk.
Hello?
Joe. Hey, Joe.
Oh, I'm sorry. It cut off there. I just wanted to phone and say I had no problems with the umpiring today, and I never do. The people that phone up and complain today won't phone up and complain when the Blue Jays get the calls in their favor, right?
Of course not.
The phone will be completely
dead.
The umpires did a great job.
Yeah. You know, Russ Martin walked in the eighth inning as a result of a terrible call that went in his favor.
You know, and the little box on the TV there, you know, people, you remember Juan Guzman?
I do.
Yeah, a big boy. I mean, he fit the part of a pitcher that could throw 100 miles an hour. Big butt, big shoulders, a real athlete, a real strong man, right? And they actually got the Ontario Police radar gun out there, and he would pop at 97, 98 miles an hour. And so when you look at that ball, and you can go on, people can go on YouTube if you don't remember him, the ball was actually still going up when it hit the plate, and it sounded different. Now, if you look at today's kids, and they show that thing on the TV, and they're saying that they're throwing the ball like a little 180-pound Sanchez is throwing at 95 miles an hour, well, of course he's not. I would say 89. I can throw the ball 65 miles an hour max. Uh-huh. I'm 6 feet, 210 pounds. 65 max. 85 miles an hour is cooking.
Are you a professional athlete?
These guys, like, what I'm trying to say is a pitch at 90 miles an hour is really moving. And they dial it up on Rogers, and they dial it up on Fox and ESPN. I get show business.
Yeah,
so
no.
I hope everybody there realizes, look, they're not throwing at 95.
Yeah, they
they're
are.
Not, they're just not.
They're throwing at 95 and 97.
Take a look at that body and take a look at that ball. 100. It's cooking. You know. Like,
thanks for the call, Joe. We're verging on levels of insanity here. Heretofore unheard of on our program. Yeah, no, they're not making it up. And 85 is not cooking it for a professional athlete who's playing baseball in the major leagues. These are legitimate readings. I don't know why I'm spending so much time on this. These people are throwing that hard. There's no conspiracy theory in effect. And Juan Guzman's an interesting guy. I mean, it's not like he was a giant. He threw hard. There are a lot of players in baseball now who throw harder. And yeah, Aaron Sanchez does throw 97, 98. It's that's an interesting call. The Blue Jays lose to the Rangers 4-0 today. Let's go to Sheldon in Toronto. Hey, Sheldon.
Hi, Mike. How are you? First, I want to express my gratitude to you for.
You got a terrible cell phone, Sheldon.
Pardon?
You got a terrible cell phone.
Oh, can you hear me now?
Let's try it here, and if it doesn't work, you're going to have
to call
us.
Okay, can you hear me right now?
Yes. Don't move anymore.
I won't, and I want to express my gratitude to you for making being a Blue Jay fan so much more enjoyable over the last 10 years, so thank you so much for that. I don't want to talk about I don't want to talk about John Gibbons, who I like very much. I just wanted to get your feedback as to whether you think one of the missing pieces is how the supporting coaching staff, like the hitting coach, the pitching coach, compared to the Yankees or the St. Louis Cardinals or the Tampa Bay in developing their talent at the major league level. Because it seems to me that I think that some of the talent isn't being developed as well as the Tampa Bay does or St. Louis does or Yankees does. And I wanted to get your feedback if you think that might be a missing piece in getting us to the next level.
I don't, but if you're talking about player development, then you're not talking about a major league coaching staff. Major league coaches are not teachers. They're coaches.
I see.
They're not here to develop players. That's what the minor leagues are for.
I get it. Well, it seems like Tampa Bay taking their pitching staff and developing it at the major league level, unless I'm just missing it. Am I missing it there?
Well, it depends, I think, on what you mean by developing.
I don't know. I saw Anthony Gost last year with the Jays, and I just thought he had so much talent. And I see him come to Detroit this year, and I see him developing or blossoming so much further. And I'm wondering if the Jays' supporting coaching staff is missing something or not. And I think you answered my question. It's more in the minor leagues that they do that, not in the major league level.
Right. And also, you know, players, I think that... I think there's this idea, and by the way, it should be noted now that Anthony Gose, I know he got off to a very good start this year. He's no longer off to a very good start. He's hitting .270, his on base is down to .310. In the month of June, see if we can get his month by month here. In the month of June, he's hitting .159, and he has become a part-time player now. So he's fallen right off the map, and who knows when it'll come back, if it'll come back, whatever. But I think a lot too much credit is often given to coaches, and a lot too much blame is often given to coaches, when the truth of the matter is it's the player, it's the talent of the player, and it's what the player does, the work the player puts in, and all of that stuff that really makes the difference. You know, you're not getting a finished product, obviously, when you get a professional player. And minor league development systems, there is teaching and there's repetition and there's work and work and work and work. And often it's the work and work and work and work, and who wants to work the hardest and who wants to put their lessons into play most, who wind up succeeding the most, coupled with the talent. So coaches don't have these magic... potions, as it were, or magic drills or device or anything like that. I don't believe that a coach can make a player that much better than he is. I really think that it's all up to the player. It's not like you got a bunch of 12-year-olds who have no idea what they're doing and a coach is teaching them how to play the game and getting the best out of them. Even at that point, the best athletes are still going to be the best players. So really, it's less about developing, I think, than it is about identifying. And you bring, the better the players are that you bring in, the better your system's going
to
be.
But how does a team overachieve? It seems to me that Tampa Bay just seems to overachieve every single year. And there seems to be a missing piece that I would like to see these tap into, and I can't identify that. It's frustrating for me as a fan.
I think if anyone could identify it, then they would be they'd be bazillionaires. I don't know if Tampa overachieves or if it's the people who are doing the analysis that that aren't, you know, putting them in the proper spot. It does feel like they're, even this year, they have no business being in first place in the American League East, and yet there they are. But you've got a manager who's never been there before, who's never managed before, who was with an entirely different team last year and the year before that, a different team. So, you know, that's not it. It's players coming up and performing.
Identifying
good players and bringing them in and calling them up at the right point in time when they're ready to contribute.
So you're satisfied with the Jays' development in general?
Absolutely.
Oh, great, thanks. And I was wondering, while I have you on the phone, can you settle a bet, a baseball bet between me and my son? And we decided you would be the judge, if you're okay with that. And there's $50 in it for you if you side with me, no matter what, of course.
Right.
If a pitcher gives up no walks and no hits over 9 innings, but yet one of the infielders blows it and a player gets on by error, does he get a perfect game or not?
Nope.
No perfect game.
A perfect game is a game in which no one reaches base, period.
if I upped it to $100, will you side with me?
Nope, because you're wrong.
Thanks for it. And, Mike, I have great gratitude for all you do for us. You make being a Blue Jay fan just so much more enjoyable, and thank you for that.
That's very swell of you to say. Thank you, Sheldon. The call is appreciated. No, a perfect game is a game in which no runners reach base. If a runner reaches base, if a batter reaches base by any means at all, it is not a perfect game, even if he reaches on an error and then you pick him off right away. Blue Jays lose at 4-0 to the Texas Rangers. Phone lines are open, 416-870-0590, *590 on the cell. Long distance is 1-888-666-0590. Jays Talk continues. We will be right back at Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. No medical exam or health questions will be asked. Sportsnet 590, The Fan, on demand.
One pitch belted deep right center field. That one's not coming back. Moreland has just shot a home run deep to right center into the 200 level. And in this fourth inning, Texas goes out in front 2-0 as Moreland ends up hitting number 10.
That was the first home run that Matt Boyd gave up in his major league career, and it was a big one. He would give up two more, one each to Robinson, Chirinos, and Rougned Odor. They were all solo shots, but the Blue Jays didn't score any runs for only the second time this year. They lose 4-0 to the Texas Rangers. Boyd ties a club record by giving up three home runs in his major league debut. Matt Williams, not that Matt Williams. Matt Williams did it against the Yankees in 1983. For the Blue Jays. It's Jays Talk, 416-870-0590, *590 on the cell, long distance, 1-888-666-0590. Taking your calls until 5 o'clock Eastern Time. Josh is in Halifax. Welcome to Jays Talk, Josh.
Hi, Mike. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to bring up a comment on balls and strikes. I know we talked about this a bit already today, but I listened to the game on the radio. Obviously, Gallardo's having a really good game. Eighth inning comes up, he walks a batter. So I feel like at that point in the game, he may be losing his stuff a little bit. You mentioned on a couple calls ago that it was a bad call. Again, I listened to it on the radio. Anyways, next guy comes up, I think it was Colabello, first pitch swing.
Yep.
So what goes through a major league pitcher's, or sorry, batter's mind? Is there any statistics that goes on? Or is it, if I see that first pitch and I think I can hit it, I'm going to hit it?
Maybe what went through Chris Colabello's mind was that when he puts a first pitch in play, he's hitting .636 this year.
Okay.
So he's had a pretty good plan when he goes up there hacking at the first pitch. I think really, okay. I know a lot of people get upset when they see players swing at the first pitch and get out. But the truth of the matter is, if you look at pretty much every player, I'm going to say at least 80% of players in the major leagues, that if they put the first pitch in play, their batting average is higher than the batting average the rest of the time. And for a lot of guys, like Colabello especially, it's significantly higher. And there's this idea that you need to work a pitcher. And that's true. You do need to work pitchers, but you need to work pitchers who aren't throwing strikes. If you try to get deep in a count with a guy who's throwing strikes, it's 0-2 before you've turned around, and you're screwed because, you know, batters hit about 100 or less on 0-2 counts for the most part. You got to be able to go up there with a plan, and if you get the pitch you want on the first pitch, maybe that's the best pitch you're going to get in that whole at-bat.
Right. The reason I bring it up, too, is because the next batter, there was a base hit.
Yeah.
And then the next batter after that, first pitch, again, I don't know if he hit into a double play, but...
Well, he did, because the other guy hit into a double play, right? He can't hit into two double plays.
So I just saw, like, two times in the eighth. You can tell he's getting a little worn down just from what I was listening to on the radio.
I don't think he was getting worn down.
No?
The reason you're bringing it up, I mean, let's be honest. The reason you're bringing it up is because... the guys who swung at the first pitch got out. And you wouldn't be bringing it up.
It's a rally. I was thinking rally, you need four runs. Why try for a, I don't know.
Hit?
I just think go for the rally, right, and let him walk a couple batters because that's when rallies happen, I think.
But why would he walk people when he hadn't been walking people all day?
Yeah, that's a very good point. But
right? You can't just let people walk people because, yeah. You know, that's another thing. Like, there's a concept out there that if you take enough pitches, a guy's just going to start walking people. It doesn't work that way.
Yep.
If a guy's pitching well, and you know, we're talking about a guy who's probably going to be the American League Pitcher of the Month for June. He had an ERA of like half a run over five or six starts this month. He's pitching really, really well. There's no point in getting deep in a count if deep in a count means 0-2-1-2, because you're just digging yourself a hole, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thanks for taking my call.
All right. Thank you. Sometimes guys pitch really well. And it's interesting because obviously the different perspective, just like the caller a few calls ago who said no one would ever call in and complain about the strike zone when there are mistakes made that favor the Blue Jays. When the Blue Jays get a great game thrown at them, and this is, again, by far the best offense in the major leagues, by a ton. So if they're going to get shut out, that means that guy pitched really well. When Mark Burley pitches a shutout, does anybody call up and say, well, why are all these guys swinging to the first pitch? Why aren't they working walks? No, because he's pitching really well. And you kind of have to change your perspective a little bit to see that. Giovanni Gallardo pitched really well. If the Blue Jays had come up, take, especially with the help he got from the home plate umpire, the home plate was a little bit wider for him than it is for most pitchers. If you come up taking, looking to draw walks, looking to get deep in counts, you're going to be 0-2, 1-2, and you're done. See the pitch you like? Put a swing on it. Chris Colabello grounded into a double play. But again, as I said, Chris Colabello came into that at bat hitting .636 this year. When he puts the first pitch in play, he had taken the first pitch in each of his first two at-bats for strikes. And now, Chris Colabello is 21 for 34 when he puts the first pitch in play this season, which is a batting average of .618. So, he wants to swing the first pitch. I will never argue with the man. Chris is in Hamilton. Hey, Chris.
Hey, how are you?
All right.
Mobile umpire. I think that the humans and do you think we can get an umpire or somebody in there to interview them and get their perspective on this whole robo umpire issue?
I don't know that there's a point to getting their perspective. We know what they're going to say, right?
Right, but I mean, it's I guess you got a point there.
Yeah. They want to keep their jobs.
True.
And they'll talk about the human element and all of that stuff and say, you know, no one's perfect, but we're the best in the world.
Right.
And they're probably right. But it could be a lot better.
Okay.
All right.
Thanks.
Thanks. I feel like, for some reason, we talk about robot umpires more than we talk about anything else on this program. You got a team that's a game and a half out of first place in the American League East. You got a team with an historically good offense, and we're sitting here talking about robot umpires. Dwayne is in California. Hey, Dwayne.
Yes, Mike. How you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm a truck driver from Toronto. See, I called you about a month ago there, and I was trying to preach to you people about patience, because this is a very, very good team. But anyway, they proved themselves since I last talked to you. What I wanted to call about was two topics, if you don't mind. And before I do, can I give a shout-out, please, to my daughter listening in Brampton and my brother from Corner Brook, Newfoundland, listening in Brampton, and also my dad listening from above.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
And you don't have to ask permission to do it if you're going to do it anyway.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Sorry for taking the liberty. My question is, what has happened to the intentional walk? As good as the Blue Jays are, and is possibly one of the best offenses in history of the game, or at least in the franchise, I don't see any intentional walks.
Well, why would you? They're that good. It's a pick-your-poison kind of team. I mean, if you walk Josh Donaldson, you got to face Jose Bautista. You walk Jose Bautista, you got to face Edwin Encarnacion.
Yeah, I guess that's a very good point.
Yeah.
A very good answer.
Yeah, that's why when Mickey Mantle hit 54 home runs in 1961, he didn't get intentionally walked once because Roger Maris was behind him, or the other way around. One of those guys never got an intentional walk because of who was hitting behind him, and that's the deal. When you're the Miami Marlins and you have one guy in Giancarlo Stanton, who unfortunately now they don't have for 4 to 6 weeks, that guy's going to get intentionally walked a ton because there's nobody else on that team that you're honestly afraid of. Pardon me. And when you look, Giancarlo Stanton this year has been intentionally walked 6 times. And he was intentionally walked 24 times last year to lead the major leagues. The Blue Jays have had 3 intentional walks this year. And it's because the guy coming up isn't somebody you want to face either.
Oh, that's a great point. Yeah, I never looked at it that way.
Oh.
But that's really good. The second topic, Mike, I love your show. You do a fantastic Blue Jays talk show here.
Thank you.
Question is, I'm a truck driver, so I get to listen to a lot of games and broadcasts. By the way, the Yankees are up 4-0 already today.
Good job on the out-of-town scoreboard there. Yep, well done.
Yeah, that kind of sucks, but... Mike, when you're broadcasting the games, can I just say something, friendly?
Sure.
Can you take your time? Can you take your time at it?
No.
In other words,
I can't.
You don't have to. No. You
I
don't
can't.
Have to steal it. You did what?
Stuff happens fast.
The what, sorry?
Stuff happens fast.
It happens fast.
Yeah. What do you mean, take your time?
When you're broadcasting the games,
uh-huh.
You know, you guys take turns.
Yeah, yeah.
Could you possibly take your time broadcasting? In other words, you don't have to fill in every second of your time broadcasting. You know, relax. Tom Cheek was very, very good at relaxing and calling the game.
He was. He was tremendous. He would let the game breathe at the right time. And I try to do that. But, you know, when stuff's happening, I got to tell you about it. That's the gig.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
But anyway, thank you for talking to me. I love your show. I listen to it on podcasts when I don't get it live. And could you possibly ask Sirius Radio to give the pregame show for you guys?
I have no idea how that works. It would be swell. It would be swell if they took the pregame, if they took the postgame, if all of that stuff. But I don't. I mean, that's way above my pay grade.
Oh, I get you. They give it once a week, man. I think on Sundays they get the half-hour pregame show, and the rest of them they really never really get the pregame show.
Interesting. All right, well, call them. Tell them you're a subscriber, and tell them to get moving on that, because that's an issue. Absolutely.
All right, buddy.
All right, thanks
you
for the call.
Care. Good luck with the Blue Jays.
Thank you, and enjoy. Continue to enjoy our broadcasts, and hopefully all of you out there continue to enjoy our broadcasts. Even Dave in Stouffville. Hello, Dave.
Oh, hi, Mike. How are you?
I'm all right, thank you.
Good. Yeah, I enjoy your show. I really enjoy listening to the show.
I'm glad.
Commenting and so forth. I didn't think I'd get through, but I just want to say one thing here. You know, things are going good when they lose, and like, it's like, who cares? Because tomorrow, you know, what pitcher is going to knock out of the game tomorrow? Like, they're such a powerhouse of a hitting team. It's just unbelievable. Just amazing that all these teams in baseball, I don't know how many teams there is.
30.
But how many, Mike?
30.
30. And we have the most powerful lineup in all of baseball. So,
by a bucket load.
Yeah. So I'm sure Alex will do the right thing. I'm sure he's going to get a pitcher or something if that's what we really need. And if we get that, I mean, look out. We're going all the way, I think.
It certainly could be, and they might even without that. But, yeah, it is interesting, David,
yeah.
And I appreciate the call and the kind words, of course. I am a little surprised by the tenor of this game today where Matt Boyd makes it, or the show. Matt Boyd makes his major league debut, gives up 3 home runs. He was fine. I enjoyed what I saw out of Matt Boyd today, and I think that was a very good major league debut. I'm really surprised that they're hasn't been anybody calling in and telling me how terrible he was. I'm surprised that there's been nobody calling in and talking about the fact that the Blue Jays have scored one run total in two games around the 12 runs yesterday, and I'm buoyed by that. That makes me happy. I think that's great that nobody's panicking, that people seem to understand that this is a really good team and they're going to lose some games and it's going to happen and it's fine, and that this was a good day today for Matt Boyd. Now, maybe everyone's just busy with the NHL draft and not paying attention today, and if this had happened on a different day, people would have been calling in and going nuts. I hope that's not the case, but it is. It's a good thing. I think it's a really good thing that there is calm about a 4-0 loss to a bad Texas Rangers team. That's a good thing. It really is. Elliot is in Toronto. You're probably going to be the last one. Elliot, go right ahead.
Sure, Mr. Wilner. I've noticed over the years that people often refer to games, close games, and there is actually a real sabermetric analysis of them. Bill James noticed in 86 that the Red Sox, the ill-fated Red Sox, went 24-10 in games decided by a run, and he did an analysis of it. And what he discovered was that there is this inexorable pull towards 500 in baseball, month to month, season to season, but particularly in games decided by a run. He found that teams that were 600 teams on average over the course of a season would play 540 or less, and teams that were 400 would play 440 or more in games decided by a run. And these games, actually, because the teams play 40 to 50 of them per year, they play a significant role in the end result of a team season. And I know that you know that the formula is runs scored squared divided by runs scored squared plus runs allowed squared. And if there's a variance between the number of games...
The formula for what?
Pardon me?
That's the formula for what?
That's the Pythagorean theorem for him that tells you how many games you should have won.
That's right. Based solely on run differential.
Right. Right.
Doesn't but take it into is, account run distribution at all. Right.
Right. It is defined by runs scored squared. And if there's a variance between the number of games that you deserve to win and the number of games that you do win, I have noticed over the years that about 80% of the time it's determined by the number of one-run games that you win, because they are, in fact, decided by random chance. They are not actually a function of good teams. That's why good teams win a significant fewer percentage of them than you expect. So if
I don't know that that's true. I mean, you just talked about the Boston Red Sox going 24-10 in one-run games in 1986. So that's a winning percentage of 706, and they weren't a 600 team that year. I mean, I think that luck determines one-run outcomes a lot more than people would like to believe it does, but I don't believe it's complete random chance.
Well, there's a huge element of random chance, because it's about sequencing when you get your hits. But if you look at the run differentials and you're looking to see, for example, right now you're looking at Oakland and you're saying, how can a team that scored 43 more runs than they've allowed be 8 games under 500? It's one of the biggest gaps I've ever seen watching it since 1987. And the reason is because they're 5-18 in games decided by a run. Because on average, a team like them would be 12-11 or 13-10. And that's where the 8 games are.
Right, and they're 9 games under their Pythagorean one loss record. Yeah, and the Blue Jays are as well. They should be a lot better than they are, but they have a crappy record in one-run games. So I'm going to ask you to wrap up your point in 15 seconds if you're
sure.
Still there.
Well, these even out generally over the course of a season, but every year there's a couple of teams that make the playoffs and don't make the playoffs, and it's solely due to the games decided by a run.
Yeah, that's probably true. And that's why luck is a major determining factor in how a team does. But the better you are, the better your chances to be lucky. We'll see you tomorrow.